four-man rush. Williams gets brought down by an excellent pass rusher in Harold Landry. 10.5 sacks last year, and they didn't even have to bring an extra man. Tennessee's defense got home.
This is all set up by Jeffrey Simmons, and here comes Harold Landry inside. Watch Simmons. He's going to end up taking three Bears offensive linemen. Coleman Shelton went over to help out and clean up, but he misses Harold Landry on the pick stunt. No excuse for that. It's been a rough day up front for the Bears O-line.
A rough day up front for the Bears O-line, indeed, and that is why I asked Matt Bowen the question that I did about how much of that is just a really, really bad matchup and how much of it is guys just not being good. And I don't know the answer.
I think it's troubling that we don't know the answer, and we've got a game to watch in 3 days. That's problematic.
And I thought it was important that we highlighted something that Matt Eberflus said yesterday regarding offensive line play, where he said the biggest improvement that you have is from week one to week two. And I thought about it. I said, whoa, 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 whoa. And I made sure that he was just talking specifically about the offensive line. And indeed he was. Here's the quote. It was week one. The biggest improvement from week one to week two is probably the biggest improvement that you have. Oh, really? I haven't heard a coach say that before, especially with a line as in as much flux as this one happens to be. Is that a thing? Have you heard that before?
Apparently it's a thing. I didn't know it was a thing, but you know, when I saw the quote, because I read the press conference, I didn't watch the press conference because I can read quicker than I can listen. I think for me, the whole point was I think you're calling out your offensive line to the in public.
Let's hear it. Let's hear him say it and then figure it out.
I thought it was solid. I think that, you know, obviously we want, you know, better run numbers. You know, I do think they protected solid at times. Again, we saw a couple ones where they didn't. Again, we're working on those things, being more solid and firm in the pocket. But again, it was week one, and the biggest improvement from week one to week two is probably the biggest improvement that you have.
I'll remember that. Okay.
Yeah, once you say something like that, though, and put it out there, now everyone's paying attention to it and saying, okay, so week two, it should be a lot better, right? And
if it's not, the biggest improvement that you
I
have, then what have you done,
yeah,
right?
That's the point right there.
That's why I asked, did he raise the stakes?
Yeah, he definitely raised the stakes.
Okay.
But the bar was pretty low, in my opinion, based on what happened on the interior when you look at what happened up the middle. I mean, there were plays where it was like minus four before you could count to one, minus 4 yards. So I think I'm very interested to see, first of all, the health of the offensive line this week. Who plays where? Is Nate Davis going to be doing Nate Davis starting things, or is he going to be off the bench? And that depends on the health, first and foremost.
Well, we haven't really gotten an answer as to the third moving part there. Because if they are going to rotate Nate Davis and Ryan Bates at right guard, cool. But we know that they also brought in Bates potentially to be the starting center. And Coleman Shelton had a bad day as the center. Could that mean if Bates loses that derby at right guard, does he then back up Shelton, or does he then get to compete at that position? They're probably figuring all that out. We probably don't know. We know that with all the staff changes they made, they kept Chris Morgan. They kept the offensive line coach, and they've said all sorts of terrific things about him and how much they respect him. But when I read a text like this, sometimes you get a dose of absolute text realism. We got the answer. It's the same damn bunch of guys from last year that sucked, and most of them were there the year before, and they sucked. They suck. That's the answer. I think it's probably a little more complicated than that.
I understand the sentiment of that message, though, because you've watched the same guys scrambled up a little bit, but mostly the same guys go, and you're thinking, well, why would it get better if you didn't improve the personnel? That's the basic gist of that message, right, from the texter. So I don't know is the answer, and I can't wait to find out. Sunday night.
I can't wait either. This is a 312 texter says that Jim Harbaugh said it post game two. That maybe this is a football aphorism. Maybe this is just an old saw that coaches like to say, that the biggest improvement you get in offensive line play is from week one to week two.
And that being said, I think when you say the biggest improvement you get is from week one to week two, that usually means you've got the same five guys out there from week one to week two.
It's a continuity issue.
The continuity has been an issue since we put pads on in training camp, right?
And sometimes it's week one to week two because the team you're playing in week two isn't as good as the team you're playing in
week
one.
That's not the case this time, is it?
I know, it's not.
And so, listen, the center and the guards got the work last week. The tackles will be worked this week. And what you draw up is, you know, that will determine how effective maybe your offense can be. If you're Shane Waldron, how am I going to scheme for what my new problems are compared to what my problems were last week?
Well, ideally, an offensive coordinator isn't scheming in regard to problems. Because then you're already half losing.
Is this an ideal situation?
No. I don't think so. But with the number of developmental graphs that we have, that's sort of how I see it in my head, that if you're supposed to expect this improvement in the O-line and this improvement in the quarterback – and this improvement in the complexity of your offense as you go to manage all of these vectors in a way that has them merge at a point where you win the Super Bowl.
Where you're going up. You're still going up.
I'm presuming up.
That's the goal. That's the goal.
Right. That may be a leap.
Desired result.
But you may get them all going up, but wildly crisscrossing each other. You may get them all going up at different rates. But the idea is getting them all up and together all the way up to the top right corner.
Well, since you're talking about the different stretches of lines going up and down, I'll feel comfortable if Caleb Williams is like the last one because he's the rookie. These other guys aren't rookies. So there should be a little bit better cohesion going up at a better rate than Caleb Williams himself.
But he's the most talented and important individual player in the
entire equation.
He's definitely
the most important, but he's got the curve of growth is the most difficult for him.
Sure, and probably has the highest potential ceiling.
Oh, absolutely.
And if in fact his zooms up, that will help pull everybody up because then you're not scheming for problems
to protect the rookie quarterback. Then make it easy for him.
If things were really working, if things really get hot, which would be awesome, and Caleb starts to say, "All right," and flexes a little bit, and he's like, "Okay, all right, that was the first game. Okay, I'll get this." And then when we say, "Oh, okay," then he's going to make that line look a whole hell of a lot better.
Facts. The problem is the level of competition they're going against in week two is one of the better teams they're going to see on the schedule all season.
So, you want to be good? Be good now.
Be good teams.
You want to be good? Be good now.
Yeah, I agree.
And this is it's just so unique. And every time I do try to zoom out a little bit, and every time I try to get some perspective into how we're talking about this Bears season, I'm still kind of blown away by the fact that there's a rookie quarterback on a team that expects to be good. And how rare it is. It almost never has. Sometimes they're thrust into action. Now, the Russell Wilson thing was completely unexpected, and this third-round pick just sort of popped in and outplayed Matt Walsh, who they gave all the money, and they made a terrific coaching move and said, this guy's just better, and I know we spent the money, but this guy's just better, and we're a better team with him, and let's go, and he'll end up in the Hall of Fame. So it's for a team to have it as their plan to go into a season and say, we expect to be good. It is reasonable that we can win 10 games with a rookie quarterback because of everything we have everywhere else on the team. That's why I want to do everything to accelerate him, not dumb it down, not stand in his way, not simplify necessarily. And all we need for the moment is for the offensive line to be okay. They don't have to be great. They don't have to be Detroit. They don't have to be the Eagles. They don't.
The question is, are they okay right now? Okay. Not just, are they an average offensive line or are they below average offensive line right now?
Don't know yet.
We don't know yet. We haven't seen a large enough sample size. That's why Sunday is so intriguing to me.
If asked, I would say below average yet.
Okay.
You pass.
But like a 4 out of 10, not like a 3 out of 10.
Right.
Yeah, like just below average. But
yeah, you know, I'm bad at snap assessments. And if I'm
I like that self-awareness.
No, I just am. I've never been good at ranking things or, you know, are they better than this? Are they better than that?
You know, when I asked it though, I was more or less talking about your comfort level with what's going to be on the
field.
Okay.
Now never.
But see opens your lid to saying, "Oh, I can put emotion into this." And then yeah.
Never ask about my comfort level always sucks.
Okay, so that's why I didn't. That's why I didn't, but I was trying to ask without asking.
My resting level of comfort in general is not great. So if and then when you're talking about it as a Bears fan,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Whatever metaphor you want, whether it is, and I said Matt Walsh again, it's Matt Flynn, sorry, 262 texter, whether it is the Sword of Damocles or whether it is Wile E. Coyote's anvil.
Wow. It's very descriptive.
That is when it comes to a Bears game, I start every Bears game presuming that's going to fall on me.
I'd rather that.
Sometimes it doesn't.
I'd rather that than Kid Icarus and then, you know.
Yeah, but Icarus is different, though. Icarus is ambitious. Icarus is the opposite. Icarus is, I have wings of wax
and
I shall fly. I shall leave this earth. And like, kid, man, it's wax and you're too close to the sun and now you're dead. And that sucks for you. But Icarus is the opposite. Icarus goes in every day like, look at this. I'm going to make my way up. Get out of here.
But I'd rather think an anvil was falling on my head and it not fall on my head than to think I'm flying to the sun and then I die.
Oh, I don't get a choice of what to think. Trust me, man.
That's the presettings, the factory settings.
What do you think I work on with professionals? What do you think I work on? They ask me, like, dude, why are you like this? I don't know.
Yeah. That's.
And the Bears make everything worse.
No, the Bears make everything exciting and fun.
The Bears make everything worse.
No, they make everything exciting and fun. I am excited about Sunday night's
game.
I am excited, too. At your core, you're excited about Sunday's game.
I always end up excited, like, here we go, let's go. What I tweeted out before the game, and I think I've done this in multiple years, the speech from Henry V, not the St. Crispin's Day speech, but the once more unto the breach speech that he gives the troops, and that it's I always try to sort of rally myself with that, thinking, here we go,
give yourself
let's do
a pep
this
talk,
and do it with that level of grandiosity, and because then that first half happened, and I went.
You know, that first half will make anybody just.
All you need to see, the tweet structure of how it started. How's it going?
Yes.
Okay. So if you were to do that, and if you follow me on Twitter during Bears games, you know that my emotions are a mess, and I can be a complete wreck and a total idiot. But it started right before kickoff with a tweet from like poetry.com of this quote from Henry V. And, you know, as Henry's troops are marching off to do battle. And the half ended with a tweet of Beavis, just saying, this sucks.
Things got simplified for you.
Simplified the offense. Yes,
yeah.
I dumped it down. That's what I did. I couldn't handle the full field reads at that point.
Back to your point that you're making, though, I just want to make one quick point about everything kind of going together in the same direction, trying to converge on the way up. My issue with this week specifically and that offensive line and why they need to have some answers to the offensive line, if you don't have Rome Odunze and if Keenan Allen is hobbled or can't play, now that's one other thing that's not working in Caleb Williams' favor, and you're going to need the run game even more because we're not depending on Tyler Scott and company and Bayless Jones to make big plays on offense. We're just not.
I don't want to depend on that.
That's my point.
Yeah,
so
that would be smart.
If the offensive line was good, that would be beneficial to everyone.
Along with Marshall Harris in for Lawrence Holmes, I'm Dan Bernstein on the Bernstein and Holmes Show. Have I got an opportunity for you? And I believe I saw him, and I believe his dog, Willie, was with him. Did I see Willie wander by? I thought I did. You can join the Scores Shane Reardon. I don't know if Willie is also getting some sort of appearance fee to be there as well, so I can't promise that. But you can join Shane Reardon for a football watch party this Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. at The Wall in Marcus Gurney Cinemas when Chicago takes on Houston in prime time. You can enjoy some great food and drink and watch the game on The Wall's massive screen. That's Sunday from 6 to 8 with Shane Reardon at The Wall in Marcus Gurney Cinema. Want to talk some more football with Bucky Brooks. How about that? NFL Network analyst and the host of the Move the Sticks podcast is going to join us next on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
You listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Nah, not really, because, you know, we was going against the defense so long in training camp, we got kind of used to seeing the coverages that they used to, and then when we get out there in a real game, like live action, and I mean, we could watch a bunch of film on the team, but we got to go out there and play to what they give us, and as Caleb was this week was his first week, so it was live action, four quarters, and they was throwing some stuff at him, so that was probably a little difficult, but I think he'll bounce back and have a good game.
Caleb Williams, the man of the hour, the man of the week, the
man of the year.
Well, he's certainly the guy who's front and center in everything we're thinking about regarding the Bears, and he should be, and that's why you get excited when you get the number one overall pick. And he's here.
And keep the number one overall pick.
He's here, and he wasn't very good. That was the problem, that we got to see him, and he was maybe meh. I don't know where he's somewhere in between. Bucky Brooks is on Twitter, at Bucky Brooks, the NFL Network analyst and the co-host of the Move the Sticks podcast, along with the esteemed Daniel Jeremiah and Rhett Lewis, available wherever you listen to podcasts, joins us now on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino, CircaLasVegas.com, Twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. Hey, Bucky, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
What do you think of Caleb Williams relative to your expectations?
Look, I think there are a lot of expectations around Caleb Williams that were outsized. And I think week one was a kind of a back to reality moment for everyone around the program in terms of what he will be early until he settles in. I think what he found out is the speed and the tempo of the game escalates quickly once you get into the regular season. The complexities of the defense that you face from preseason to regular season change. So you see changing pictures. And I think he just has to kind of understand how the game has to be played to be successful. The one thing that I'm encouraged by is, look, the team was able to win without him bringing his A game. He was able to flash some things that we've seen him do time and time again in terms of the ball coming out, being on target, and those things. But it comes down to consistency. If I have to make a comparison or an analogy, I would really try and compare it to what Caitlin Clark experienced with the WNBA. I think if people go back and remember how her season started and look at how it ended, I would expect Caleb Williams to have a similar journey. It takes a while to adapt to pro sports, and no matter how high you're drafted, it still is an acclimation period. I think he'll catch up to it, but I think it may be a little slower than we anticipated based on the expectations and the reality of playing the National Football League.
I think that's a great analogy
to Caitlin
Clark, especially because here in Chicago, we're probably clamoring for Caleb Williams to already be put on the Olympic team, but it's not going to happen. Bucky, when you look at the comparisons, and you know they're coming, Sunday Night Football, bright lights, everybody's attention is going to be on this game. C.J. Stroud is now the new gold standard as far as rookie quarterbacks are concerned. 4,000 plus yards passing, just 5 interceptions. That's the crazy one for me. Only 5 interceptions. And I keep telling people who are like, Caleb Williams, yeah, he didn't play well, but he did not turn the ball over, and that's why they were able to win the game. Is it a fair comparison to have him reaching for that type of season that we saw C.J. Stroud come up with last year?
Well, I mean, yeah, everyone would like their quarterback to play like C.J. Stroud did. But I think if you go back and look at the first three games, it took to game 3 before C.J. Stroud really found his stride. And part of that is him adjusting to the NFL game. But a lot of it is the play caller adapting to what the young quarterback can handle. And as Caleb Williams plays more, Shane Waldron will be able to kind of get a better feel for it, the plays that work for him, what he likes, what he can't see and is not quite comfortable with, and how to best play around a young quarterback who may either be thriving or struggling. And so when to add more, when to scale back, and those things. But yeah, CJ Stroud is absolutely the gold standard for what you want your young quarterback to be able to do. To surpass 4,000 yards, to only have 5 interceptions, you normally don't get that kind of production while also that kind of having that kind of ball security from a young player learning. If Caleb Williams can continue to avoid the big egregious mistake, their defense is good enough to keep them in games and probably help them win games. He just has to kind of continue to stay within himself and keep the main thing the main thing. And the main thing is for the Bears to win and to do whatever is necessary that week to win games, whether it's throwing for 300 or throwing for 100, just putting the team first over the individual agenda.
Bucky, I'm always fascinated historically in the sort of dialectic relationship between offense and defense, large scale, and when offenses change and defenses react. There's a great book, Blood, Sweat, and Chalk, that always talks about which side is ahead of which side and then how the rules change to affect offense. I was reading something the other day about we didn't just have one week of bad quarterbacking. We're going on now a large trend line of the decline of passing touchdowns and the rise of long field goals, with coaches settling for a lot of these more makeable than ever long field goals. Where do you think we are in the tug of war between large scale offense and defense in the NFL?
I think as much as you try and legislate defensive out of the league, I think great coaches understand that defense gives you a chance to win a ton of games in the regular season. In the postseason, yeah, you got to be able to put up points, but it's very similar to baseball. Is it pitching or hitting that leads you to the championship? And a lot of times, good pitching surpasses good hitting. The National Football League has a lot of great defensive minds who kind of understand how to play within the rules to stymie offenses. And so we went from seeing zone coverage to now we're seeing more man-to-man coverage, where you're taking away the easy throws and making people make tight window throws and challenge the quarterback to fit it into small areas. You also are seeing people concede the run because it's a slower depth than if you give up big plays in the passing game. And we'll be honest, as much as we want the quarterback to kind of be the old John Wayne that does everything, the best teams win, and there's a formula and a recipe that always works that stands the test of time. If you run the football, you play good defense, you have great special teams, you're going to win a lot of games, and that's going to give you a chance. And despite the push to make the game more entertaining by throwing the ball all over the yard, the winning recipe is the winning recipe. And if you can reduce your turnovers by running the ball and leaning on your defense and having big plays and special teams, you're going to be one of the last teams standing at the end of the day when it comes to who's in the postseason tournament, who has a chance to play for the title.
The Bears certainly used that recipe in week one. That's exactly how they won the game. It was just those three things that you just described. Doing the same thing in week two seems to be a bit more challenging when you're going up against C.J. Stroud and D'Amico Ryans and that defense. What is your blueprint to how the Bears can somehow pull off this upset on the road Sunday night?
I think the recipe is the same. And I think in his heart of hearts, Matt Eberflus knows how you have to play to win games. And excited as everyone is around the quarterback, you still have to keep perspective on what is best for the team at this moment. The team has a lot of weapons, but some of those weapons are going to be on the shelf this week because of the injury. Keenan Allen, Roma Dunze, who knows if they're going to be available, particularly Keenan Allen. And so if you don't have those guys, when that completely has to shift the way you play, you got to lean on the defense. You may have to play a little more keep-away ball control offense to prevent C.J. Stroud from getting those extra offensive possessions. And then you got to find a way to get it done in the kicking game to shrink the field, but to give yourself scoring chances. For the Bears to win, I think it still has to be on the strength of the defense. The defense, since the last half of last season, has played really well. I think you want to lean into that, see if they can create some turnovers, because C.J. Stroud typically doesn't turn it over. But if they can create a turnover or two and set the young quarterback in favorable field position and he can score touchdowns, that is the recipe for them to win games. I think your approach is trying to get it into the fourth quarter and hoping that one side of the ball can make a play to tip you over the top.
The Bears do a lot of rotation in their front seven They've got a lot of ends, tackles, linebackers active, and they use them to keep them fresh. And sometimes you end up with a play that's completely beyond your control, and you say, well, why wasn't Montez Sweat on the field on that play? And the answer is, well, if they knew that was going to happen, they probably would have had him on the field, but they didn't, and they are rotating guys to keep them fresh. What is your philosophy, your belief on, is there a way that good teams do it, or is there no right way to try to keep a balance between the number of snaps your best players play and making sure your best players are at their peak and available throughout a year?
That's a really good question, and it's a question that front offices and coaching staffs grapple with all the time. So there's one school of thought where you want your best players to play and let your stars kind of determine the outcome of the game. The problem that you have early in the year when you play your stars, all of those minutes, all of those snaps, they're coming off a preseason where they barely played. So conditioning is definitely a factor. The second part of it is this is a developmental league. And no matter how hard we try, there can be injuries and other things that take place where at the end of the year, you're going to need some of your young players to play key spots. The only way for those guys to get ready to play is you have to play them. And you have to be courageous enough to play them in big moments and stick with the rotations that you've established before the game. If the Bears are going to be the team that you want them to be, not only this year, but in future years, those young players have to get on the field. You have to play them, and you got to trust that they can play in those key moments because your team is going to be better for it in the end when more people are playing early in the year.
It's so funny you bring that up because Matt Eberflus mentioned the other day in his experience with Gary Pinkel. He said something he always took away from Gary Pinkel was play young guys, play the young guys. He said something to the effect of you're never, even if you live with some mistakes, ultimately you're going to be glad that you played the young guys.
Yeah, 100%, because those guys are ultimately going to be your future. And if you think about playing young players, look, it's not a factor now because the quarterback has a ways away from being paid. But when you eventually pay the quarterback, it changes the way that you have to build your team. You have to build it with more young players playing in key roles because they're young, cheap talent. Well, that means that you have to have a developmental plan and process to get young guys onto the field. Look, Eberflus has been around a lot of places where that was part of the DNA. And so you got to play them and you got to trust that they're going to play because the more guys that you can play, the more you can encourage them to play hard because if you play hard and get tired, we can put somebody else in. So it's also a big part of his formula. He talks about the hits philosophy and those things. But look, man, it's about effort. It's about competing. It's about hustling. To do that, you got to play young players because when you expend that kind of energy to play to that standard that they've established, you can't play the same guys 65 to 70 snaps. They'll wear out in the fourth quarter.
The quarterback play has been much maligned through week one. And Bucky, I just am curious as to how much of a step forward you think this league will take in week two with the level of play from the quarterback position, or is this, as Dan was kind of alluding to earlier, about defenses being that much better?
I think as a part of it is about defenses continue to be better, but another part of it is, look, man, it's hard to play quarterback in this league, and it's one that requires you to consistently adapt to your environment. And as you're adapting to the environment, there can be some struggles, some ebbs and flows with all of it. I think it's one that the quarterback play will continue to get better, but I don't know if this league was ever designed to be a pass-only league. I think there has to be a level of balance. And the pendulum swung one way a few years ago where it was all passing and we had this disregard for the run. I think it always falls in between. It'll never be 50-50, but I think the league is really built to be 55-45 pass-run, with the running game and running backs being a key factor in the offensive puzzle.
Bucky, last thing for you before we let you go. Give us one team that outperformed your expectations in week one and one team that underperformed your expectations in week one.
The first team would be the Minnesota Vikings in terms of how they performed. Sam Darnold, much maligned, often criticized for what he wasn't in New York and then in Carolina, found his way a little bit in San Francisco. The way that he played under the direction of Kevin O'Connell makes everyone wants to go back to those old scouting reports and be like, see, I told you he has an opportunity to be a good player in this league. So that's one team. I think the Cleveland Browns, the way they let it egg against the Dallas Cowboys, I think there's some disappointment in that. not only just about Deshaun Watson, but just the way that they played. They didn't play like a team that has a roster that looks like it should contend for a title. The one thing that we do know, you don't want to overreact to what you see in week one. It takes about 3 to 4 weeks before teams settle in, and you can start to get a true assessment on what a team could be this season.
Bucky, outstanding stuff. I love that Caleb Williams, Caitlin Clark comp. That's terrific. Really appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
That is Bucky Brooks of NFL Network. Why didn't I think of that?
I'm the one with the WNBA shirt on. Like,
and by the way, that WNBA shirt is what color?
This is orange, isn't it?
I believe it is.
Orange and cream.
I believe it is.
I could go to a Bucks game right now and fit in just nicely if nobody's paying attention to what I'm wearing.
I want to talk about that color specifically when we come back on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, your midday destination for Chicago sports talk on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
I don't care for the orange jerseys.
Well, sucks for you. Caller 6 to the Score contest line, 312-540-0670. We'll win a pair of tickets to see Jeff Lynn's ELO live at the United Center on Saturday, September 28th. If Al Michaels is 79, how old is Jeff Lynn?
I do not know the answer to that question. I'm sure we can get further.
Yeah, check on that for me, right? Because he's got to be.
You don't
70.
Feel like he's that young?
He's got to be 75.
75 years young is what we're going to go with.
Somebody said the other day, is Sammy Hagar actually 76? Does that sound right?
I would not know that.
I think that's because sometimes you just don't think about somebody, and we always do it on these award shows that my wife and I will sit next to each other, and be like, oh, that's Orlando Bloom. How old is he?
How old is Orlando Bloom?
47.
Jeff Lynn. Jeff Lynn, 76.
He is 76.
That's a good job.
Nice. And Sammy Hagar also 76?
I remember when I thought 47 was old, by the way.
Yeah.
It's not.
Well, yes.
It's very young. Oh, it's spry. No.
I remember when I thought 60 sounded old. 60? You're half dead. And then, you know, the Beatles have the song When I'm 64? Well, now, you know, they're
what's crazy is you ask, like, a college graduate, what they think of a 30-year-old, 30, that's old.
Oh, 30 sounds so old.
30 is just ancient. And, you know what never gets old, though?
What?
The NFL creating all the jerseys they can in all the colors and all the languages to sell to you at home.
I don't, the only Bears uniform I kind of minded was the one that recalled their segregated past that they were shamed out of using.
History is history.
And to George McCaskey's credit, when Jack Silverstein and some other historians were like, hey, you know, when you wore those uniforms, there were some people who Dallas kind of didn't want on the team. And you might not want to celebrate that, and they became aware of it, but not so with the orange uniforms that are, or as my wife would say, orange uniforms that are going to be in evidence on Sunday night.
Orange uniforms with the orange helmets, right? So,
yeah.
And then the all-white for the Texans. Okay, that's going to be quite the color scheme.
But that's not bad. The issues that I generally have, the aesthetic issues I have, are the matchup. Like, the most recent Super Bowl was an awful uniform matchup. It was awful, the Chiefs and the Niners.
What were the Niners wearing?
It's just the combination of that red.
Oh, and that red.
Yeah, I find myself somehow sensitive to, like, the art direction. It happens to me in movies when you have a movie that's got a really yellow, really blue color
palette.
Sticks
to the classics, black and white.
And sometimes. Most of those are bad. But it starts to bug me. And I think I'll adjust. I think I'll be okay. But I get it if people don't like it, because there's some people with better memories than I that know that there were the good orange uniform games and some bad orange uniform games. I don't know.
That holds true. I like the orange. I'm wearing orange right now.
I know you are. That's why I mentioned it.
I think it looks beautiful on my dark hue.
Yeah, you can pull it off. I have two orange T-shirts, and both make me look bad, but I won't throw them out because they're my T-shirts.
Yeah, why would you throw out stuff that still has value and that you can wear it?
You know, I wore one the other day. Or it was actually over the summer.
Is it around the house or in public?
Either. I don't care. Something. Okay. I do have some. Anything I wear only in the house.
Yeah, see?
That's
a thing.
That's like I have pants with no ass.
Wait, what?
Yes, I have assless pants. But those I can only wear in the house. And so they'll tell me, like, don't, like, go to CVS or go to Mariano's and forget that you're wearing your assless pants. And they said, why don't you throw
like
those?
Chaps? Like, I'm
no,
trying to...
it's sweatpants, but the ass blew out completely. So, and they're super comfortable. I have to tell you, you know, like, if I could make it fashionable to wear assless pants, I would, because they're immensely comfortable, but my family thinks I'm disgusting. And so, anyway, I'm wearing this orange shirt, and Jason looks at me. He's 20. And he looks at me and goes, that's the shirt you were wearing when I caught my first fish when I was 4. And I said, what? He goes, yeah, you were wearing that. He goes, I remember. We were at Daniel Wright Woods, and that's when I caught my first fish when I was 4 years old, and you were wearing that shirt.
You have 16-year-old shirts?
Oh, I'm older than that.
I mean, I guess I do, too. I have shirts from college.
We got weights and fish.
There we go.
No, my oldest one that I still have is a shirt from Abaco Key, Bahamas, that we had to buy because our luggage didn't make it to our resort. So we had to buy stuff at the gift shop.
Yeah.
To wear, and that's when I was 13. And I still have that shirt.
How old are you now?
I'm 55.
That's wild that it doesn't have holes in it?
It may have a couple.
Oh, okay. So I think that was pristine nature. But so you're not okay with the orange? I just want to get a final.
On you?
No, on the Bears.
Like, you probably look awesome in mustard yellow.
I don't think I've...
An electric blue. I bet you could do like a blue suit.
I had a suit. I had an electric blue suit.
A bright blue suit.
News director said he did not like that.
Why?
He said, you will not be wearing that on the air anymore.
Why?
Because it was unconventional. It was,
come on.
He said it was distracting to the viewer.
Distracting with its handsomeness and electricity.
I mean, I appreciate the kind words.
It had to be. You should come join us here because we are going to hand things off to the Score Afternoon Show with Matt Spiegel and today Ruthie Polinsky. We are broadcasting live from Lake Street Plaza at Prue, and there's all kinds of outdoor seating. There's a lovely garden. There's a fountain. There are food trucks. There are games. There are toys. There are 670 The Score squish balls, and Circus Sports Illinois is here, and they have merch for you. If you download the app and you make a deposit, you will benefit from some free, fun, cool stuff from our dear friends at Circa Sports and Circa Sports Illinois. And when we come back, we will talk to Spiegel and Polinsky on the Score.